We get it underway, though, by getting on board the phone line to talk a little baseball as we're joined by our friend Sean McAdam of MassLive.com. Hello there, Sean.
Good afternoon, Rich. How are you?
I'm doing pretty well, thanks. How's your day so far?
Can't complain. Thank you.
Good, good. I'll try not to take it in a bad direction here as we talk a little baseball. First of all, looks like it may be an interesting World Series. I'm not sure how many people have the Texas Rangers there to start the season, but it's nice to get somebody different in there.
Yeah, a team that hasn't been to the World Series since 2011, I believe it was. So we're talking a dozen years now, and a team that over that final weekend of the season didn't look like they were guaranteed to get into the postseason. You still had Seattle in play, and Texas went up and lost enough games to cost itself the AL West title and had to go on the road, which they did, to Tampa and then Baltimore. And look, give them a lot of credit. Not only did they go on the road, but they played well on the road in the ALCS, really, all the way through the postseason. In fact, just like the Astros, they were better on the road than they were at home.
Yeah, and it should be an interesting Game 7 tonight in the National League Championship Series. And again, home has not really been a big advantage for anybody so far.
Yeah, true. I mean, the Phillies are actually a pretty good home team, but they couldn't wrap it up last night when they had an opportunity to get rid of the Diamondbacks, but lost 5-1. That's the one team that really has shown an ability to use the home crowd, I think, not just this October, but really ever since Citizens Bank Park opened. The Phillies have a 700-plus winning percentage at home in the postseason. So they've been very tough, but weren't last night when they could have clinched the pennant and punched their ticket to the World Series. And as a number of people noted today on social media, and this is one of those weird baseball facts, for a franchise that is about 120-something years old, tonight, incredibly, will be the first Game 7 the Phillies have ever taken part in.
Yeah, I saw that last night. That's a remarkable statistic, but hey, one of the many reasons that we love the game of baseball. Well, the Red Sox continue their search for a baseball operations director. How many people are left standing right now, do you think, in that search?
Well, it wouldn't seem to be more than three or four at max, I think, at this point, Rich. We know that Craig Breslow is still in the mix. We know that Eddie Romero is still in the mix. It's possible that Neil Huntington remains with his hat in the ring. And there's always the possibility that there is a mystery candidate. In fact, I wrote last week that there was a person who had interviewed already for the position that hadn't been publicly identified. After I wrote that story, news of Gabe Kapler's involvement came out. Whether that was the person to whom someone I was speaking to was referring, I don't know. But as I said, it would seem there's at least the possibility of three, if not four, with, I think, Breslow the clear favorite at this point.
So do we know what the job description is yet for this position? Who will they have to answer to? Is it Sam Kennedy? Does John Henry pay any attention anymore? Who's in charge there?
Yeah, I think whoever gets hired and whatever title they end up with, whether it's plain old general manager or president of baseball ops, as Dave Dombrowski was titled, or chief baseball officer, which was the title given to Heim Bloom, there's no question that whoever has that job is reporting to Sam Kennedy, who in turn is reporting to ownership. I think it's also safe to assume that any significant decision that's made in baseball ops, and that would mean, you know, a significant free agent contract or a sizable trade, you'd have to have John Henry and Tom Werner and Mike Gordon signing off at the top on ownership. But on a daily basis, I think it's pretty clear that the chain of command features the chief baseball person reporting up to team president and CEO Sam Kennedy, and that's the way it's been for a while here.
You've written about the struggles that the Red Sox have had attracting candidates, and how much of an obstacle is their public support of Alex Cora and saying that he's going to be there certainly at least through next season?
I think actually the issue of Cora returning in 2024 is not much of an impediment. I don't know that there is a groundswell of people who would otherwise be interested in this job who might come in saying, well, my one condition is I got to get rid of that bum in the dugout, because that's not how Alex Cora is viewed throughout the industry. He's considered to be a very good manager. He's won a World Series. He's taken the team to the postseason twice, and he's generally highly thought of. I think the other issues are far bigger in some of the obstacles they faced and why so many have said thanks but no thanks when given the opportunity to interview for the position. You could put them in any order you wish, but among them are the turnover in that job. This will be the fifth chief baseball executive since 2011. That's a lot of revolving doors to that baseball ops department, and doesn't speak well to the security that comes with that job, no matter what title you get. And then I think another issue is you're inheriting a pretty static baseball ops staff. People like Brian O'Halloran and Raquel Ferreira and Eddie Romero himself, who are all capable executives and well thought of, but it is unusual to have high-ranking people in baseball ops survive not just one or two changes at the top, but several. And you're effectively being told you can't bring your own people in because we already have people in place. And while they see that as a positive in terms of continuity, I'm not sure that a lot of interested applicants are seeing it the same way. And then finally, and this is probably the third thing on the list, is not Cora's presence or the inherent understanding that he returns to the dugout in 2024, but the fact that he's involved at least somewhat in the process of hiring someone who, for all intents and purposes, is going to serve as his boss.
Mm.
I don't know if that's unprecedented, but it sure as hell is pretty rare. I was also told that Cora has not exerted much influence so far. He may have sat in on some interviews, but I don't think he is selecting people to interview or having much say in who advances from one round to the next. But still, just it is kind of an upside-down job pyramid here, where Alex Cora has at least some involvement in choosing who's going to be his boss ultimately.
We're talking with Sean McAdam here on Downtown. Well, let's talk about what the offseason will be like for the Red Sox. So once we get through the World Series and get that new baseball ops person in charge. First of all, the free agent market, who'll be leaving the team? Can you clarify who is likely not to come back and who has an opportunity but may not return to the Red Sox?
Well, certainly, you know, you start with the number of free agents. The most noteworthy of whom is Justin Turner, who did a terrific job, knocked in 97, 98 runs. In many ways was their most productive and certainly most clutch hitter when it came to coming through with a runner at third and less than two out or a runner in scoring position. He's going to be 39 years old and looking for a multi-year commitment from somebody, and he'll probably get it. But given some of the issues the Red Sox have defensively and perhaps wanting to shift more at bats to DH for, say, Yoshida or even Devers and Casas, it would seem that they would not want to commit themselves to 2 years to a guy who's going to be, you know, 40 and 41 in the second year of that deal. So that's one. James Paxton, who had a nice first half and a not-so-nice second half, is another free agent who could well leave. Adam Duvall, who when healthy, was a pretty productive guy. In fact, ended up with the best OPS of any of the position players on the roster. I'd say it's likely he leaves. I suppose there's a scenario under which he comes back and plays some outfield and DH and maybe even learns to play first base again to give them a right-handed option with Casas at first. Those are the big guys that, you know, you need to focus on. There are some others on the roster, some more spare parts, but those are the big three that are headed to free agency.
And what about guys like Alex Verdugo, Bobby Dalbec? How much of a market is there for them out there?
Well, you're talking about two very different cases. You know, Verdugo had a decent year, certainly a very good year defensively, where he played well enough in right field to be named last week a finalist for an AL Gold Glove. That's his first of his career. But he ended up with an OPS plus of 102, meaning he's 2% better than your average player. And now he's starting to make a little bit more money in his final arbitration-eligible season. I think he's on tap to make about $10 million in 24, and that'll be the last year of control. I'd say that they certainly would not be averse to moving him and would listen, but I wonder how much they're going to get, given that he's only got a year of control, starting to make a little money, and also I think his reputation precedes him with some of the issues he's had over the last couple of years. With Dalbec, he's a guy that has put up gigantic numbers at AAA, but the classic case of a guy who can't translate that success, at least on a regular basis at the big league level, and a guy who definitely looks like he could use a change of scenery and a fresh start with another organization.
Now, Sean, do they need to wait? Are they required to wait until after the World Series to announce the new operations person?
Not necessarily. They could conceivably make that announcement on an off day. The World Series gets started Friday. I think we can reasonably expect it's not going to happen tomorrow or Thursday as they start getting into a second round of interviews and perhaps having the leading candidate meet directly with ownership. That's going to take a little time. So if you're circling days on the calendar and trying to read what day the white smoke's going to come up, it's not going to be Friday or Saturday, and it would be unlikely that they would introduce a candidate on Sunday, which is the off day between games 2 and 3. But then if you're playing Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, then next Thursday is a date of interest because that would enable them to have an off day, not clash with a World Series game that day, and they could conceivably introduce the new person and have he or she ready to travel to the GM meetings, which begin a week from Monday in Phoenix. So there are ways around it, but they've also said they're not going to be prisoner to any calendar and not rush the process in order to have somebody in place for the GM meetings. Conceivably or presumably they would have people like Brian O'Halloran and Eddie Romero and Raquel Ferreira on hand to sort of get things rolling for them and act as surrogates until the new person is hired. But a week from Thursday would be the good betting day if you're wondering when this announcement might come.
All right. Well, the thing to do is follow Sean if you're not already on social media, read his work at Mass Live, and be the first, well, the second after Sean to know what's going on there in Boston with the Red Sox. Sean, thank you as always, and we'll catch up with you again before too long.
Sounds good, Rich. Thanks.